MyAudiobooks.ai presents Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, Nile Drought, Diplomacy, and Shared Water Security. By late 2024, Ethiopia completed its fifth reservoir filling and declared major construction effectively finished. Yet more than a decade of diplomatic negotiations between Ethiopia, Egypt, and Sudan concluded without a binding treaty on how to operate the giant structure. Egypt calls the Nile an existential matter, tied directly to its national survival. Two stark claims dominate international coverage: that the dam will inevitably drain Egypt dry, and that northeastern Africa is hurtling toward the modern world's first true water war. The reality behind both claims depends on river mechanics, diplomatic strategy, and the mathematical pressure of a multi-year drought. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. The Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam sits on the Blue Nile, known in Ethiopia as the Abay, just upstream from the border with Sudan. It is designed primarily as a massive hydroelectric power plant, engineered to generate electricity rather than divert river water into expansive agricultural irrigation. Ethiopia launched construction in 2011, financing the multi-billion dollar project through domestic treasury bonds, citizen donations, and public funds, rather than major international lenders. For Addis Ababa, the project represents sovereign authority and national industrialization. Over half of Ethiopia's population historically lacked access to grid electricity. Powering new factories, connecting rural communities, and generating regional energy export revenue require transforming the river's seasonal deluge into reliable electrical output. Instead of the Blue Nile surging past in a seasonal summer flood, deep reservoir storage allows engineers to release water through turbines steadily throughout the calendar year. Downstream, Egypt views that upstream control with profound alarm. Egypt depends on the Nile for nearly all its renewable fresh water, supporting agriculture, drinking water networks, and municipal life. Under colonial-era arrangements, reaffirmed in a 1959 bilateral treaty, Egypt claimed 55.5 billion cubic meters of Nile water each year, while Sudan received 18.5 billion. A single cubic meter represents 1,000 liters, making these allocations immense national volumes. Ethiopia was excluded from those historic treaties and rejects their legal validity entirely. Egypt relies on Lake Nasser, the reservoir behind its High Aswan Dam, to cushion dry years. But expanding domestic food production and a population surpassing 100 million amplify its exposure to upstream changes. Sudan sits directly between these competing priorities. Khartoum stands to gain cheaper electricity, reduced seasonal flood damage, and more uniform irrigation flows. At the same time, Sudan inherits immediate dam safety concerns: diminished silt for riverbank soil, and disruption for farmers who rely on seasonal floodwaters to moisten farmland along the riverbanks. In July 1993, Cairo and Addis Ababa signed a broad bilateral framework endorsing cooperation and mutual non-harm, but that framework contained no specific operating rules. The tension between historical downstream dependence and upstream sovereign development created a fundamental question: how can a hydroelectric dam that passes water through its turbines still compromise water security downstream? Evaluating the dam's physical effect requires distinguishing between water consumption and the control over its timing. Hydroelectric facilities do not consume water in the manner of desert farming canals. Water enters the intake towers, turns the turbines to generate electrical current, and discharges back into the riverbed downstream. The real downstream consequences depend on three separate operational phases: reservoir filling, steady-state electricity generation, and drought management. During the filling phase, Ethiopia retained a portion of the annual summer flood to accumulate dozens of billions of cubic meters of storage. That retention temporarily reduced the volume traveling downstream relative to natural historical flows. Favorable rainfall seasons across the Ethiopian highlands helped cushion those retention periods, allowing downstream reservoirs to absorb the initial filling stages without catastrophic agricultural losses. Under steady-state power generation, the river's calendar timing changes permanently. The natural Blue Nile delivers roughly 80% of its annual volume during a turbulent summer peak between July and September, followed by lean winter and spring flows. A regulated reservoir flattens that profile, releasing a steady stream of water into Sudan every month of the year. Actual physical water losses from the reservoir stem from two causes: surface evaporation under intense highland heat and subsurface seepage into the bedrock. While evaporation removes water from the river system permanently, seepage often re-enters regional groundwater tables or gradually returns downstream. Not every drop lost from the reservoir surface disappears from the river basin. The structural danger is not a disappearing river. It is the upstream power to decide when that water flows. Egypt's primary vulnerability is that during a prolonged drought, an upstream operator might choose to preserve its own storage and energy production, withholding water precisely when downstream reservoirs are dropping toward emergency levels. Over more than 10 years, the three governments repeatedly agreed to diplomatic ideals while deadlocking on specific legal and operational terms. In March 2015, the leaders of Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan signed the Declaration of Principles in Khartoum. The document endorsed regional cooperation, equitable utilization, and the obligation to avoid causing significant harm. It formally mandated joint agreements on filling timelines and annual operations, but the declaration established no numerical release volumes, no compulsory dispute mechanics, and no binding sanctions for unilateral action. Diplomatic engagement peaked between late 2019 and early 2020, when the United States Department of the Treasury and the World Bank participated as observers in Washington. Those sessions produced a comprehensive draft agreement governing drought releases and reservoir operations. Egypt initialed the document, but Ethiopia declined to sign, arguing that the text compromised national sovereignty and effectively codified downstream colonial-era quotas. Subsequent talks sponsored by the African Union failed to bridge the gap, and Ethiopia proceeded with successive reservoir filling stages without a signed tripartite agreement. A diplomatic opening emerged in July 2023. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi and Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed agreed to resume urgent negotiations. They aimed to finalize an operating compact within 4 months, accompanied by an Ethiopian pledge to prevent significant downstream harm during its fourth reservoir filling. Formal discussions resumed in Cairo in August, continued in Addis Ababa in September, and reconvened in Cairo in October. By December 2023, negotiations collapsed without progress. In 2024, Egypt delivered a formal letter to the United Nations Security Council, arguing that Ethiopia used prolonged negotiations as a diplomatic screen while securing unilateral physical control over the river. Four unresolved pillars explain why technical river modeling repeatedly converts into political deadlock. The first is legal status. Egypt and Sudan seek a legally binding treaty registered under international law, while Ethiopia favors non-binding operational guidelines that preserve executive flexibility. The second is drought management. The parties disagree on the specific volumetric thresholds that compel Ethiopia to release additional storage during successive dry years and how low the reservoir should drop to sustain Aswan. The third is data exchange. Downstream operators require automated, real-time reporting of upstream inflows, reservoir elevation, and planned discharge schedules to manage their own dams safely. The fourth is dispute resolution. Cairo and Khartoum advocate for binding international arbitration when disputes arise, while Addis Ababa prefers resolving differences through internal political consensus among government ministers. Peer-reviewed hydrological and economic modeling clarifies where real mutual benefits exist and where inescapable trade-offs emerge. Comprehensive basin studies demonstrate that coordinated reservoir management delivers higher regional economic output, increases basin-wide electricity generation, and maintains agricultural water security in Sudan compared to uncoordinated operations. Coordinated operations still impose uneven regional trade-offs. One extensive multi-basin study showed that under collaborative operation scenarios, Egyptian hydropower production at the High Aswan Dam declined across approximately 58% of simulated hydrological sequences between 2020 and 2049. While collaborative rules protected Egyptian irrigation supplies, altering the seasonal timing and water elevation at Aswan shifted Egypt's own electrical output. The ultimate stress test for any Nile agreement is a multi-year drought. In seasons of normal or abundant rainfall, the Blue Nile provides ample water to spin turbines, sustain Sudanese farms, and replenish Lake Nasser. But during a protracted dry period comparable to the historical droughts of the 1980s, inflows drop precipitously. If upstream operations prioritize maintaining reservoir storage for domestic electricity generation during a multi-year drought, downstream reserves drain rapidly to sustain Egyptian agriculture. Lake Nasser could reach dangerously low operating levels, triggering agricultural water rationing and power shortfalls across Egypt. Climate projections add further uncertainty, pointing to possible Nile Basin futures that are either substantially wetter or markedly drier over the coming decades. These physical vulnerabilities explain why international commentators repeatedly describe the dispute as a potential trigger for interstate armed conflict. But academic research on transboundary water basins reveals that sovereign nations rarely wage war exclusively over water access. Severe water scarcity regularly inflames political rhetoric, but it historically drives governments toward treaties, joint river commissions, and operational protocols. Throughout this standoff, Egypt used military diplomacy, regional alliances, and United Nations appeals alongside formal negotiations, avoiding direct armed intervention. The presence of upstream concrete does not make war automatic. It makes coordinated governance essential. With major construction effectively finished and annual reservoir filling stages well established, the central debate has shifted. The question is no longer whether Ethiopia can build and fill a mega dam on the Blue Nile. The question is whether the three nations can establish operating protocols before a prolonged regional drought begins. Sustainable risk reduction depends on three concrete measures. First is mandatory continuous hydrological data sharing. Downstream engineers at the Ros Iris Dam in Sudan and the High Aswan Dam in Egypt cannot manage their spillways or protect public infrastructure if they must estimate upstream releases from delayed satellite imagery. Transparent data eliminates operational guesswork. Second is an adaptive drought framework. Effective river governance cannot rely on fixed annual volumetric quotas that ignore real-world rainfall variation. Agreements require flexible, sliding-scale release commitments linked to verified river inflows, combined with agreed formulas for how upstream and downstream reservoirs will rebuild their reserves once normal rains return. Third is an authoritative dispute settlement body. Broad international legal concepts like equitable utilization provide little operational direction when multi-nation reservoirs are dropping simultaneously. Technical commissions require clear authority to resolve day-to-day operational disagreements before they escalate into national security standoffs. Achieving this framework remains exceptionally difficult. Sudan remains engulfed in domestic armed conflict, destabilizing the central governance of the country situated directly downstream of the dam. In Ethiopia and Egypt, water rights remain deeply intertwined with national pride and political legitimacy. A persistent crisis of diplomatic trust does not equal an interstate water war, but operating a major transboundary river without agreed drought protocols creates continuous, unnecessary vulnerability. When Nile tensions surface in the next dry cycle, the outcome will not depend on political speeches. It will depend on whether upstream and downstream operators have agreed on drought release thresholds, and whether they are exchanging verified data across the border every single day.
If this analysis clarified the real trade-offs shaping the Nile Basin, take that perspective with you into the next headline. Consider the delicate balance between sovereign energy development and downstream water survival, and reflect on the institutions required to manage shared resources on an increasingly crowded river. Thanks for watching. To create your own audiobooks from your prompts and documents, visit myaudiobooks.ai. Subscribe for more.